Hello, and welcome to the Cancer Horizons podcast. In each episode, you'll hear from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals to do what CURE does best: provide cancer updates, research, and education. William S. Laird gives readers an enlightening, inspiring, and unflinching look at his journey with appendiceal cancer in his memoir, Not Me, Cancer, now available via Archway Publishing. Laird first received his diagnosis of cancer in 2015 after experiencing severe pain and nausea while driving from his home in Kentucky to Michigan to install a wheelchair and single-person lift he and his wife Victoria have built for her parents. In the nearly decade since, he has undergone 35 rounds of chemotherapy and counting, as well as procedures including a surgical debulking via hyperthermic intraperitoneal chemotherapy. In this episode of the Cancer Horizons podcast, Laird speaks with CURE about his decision to share the story of his cancer journey so far, the importance of perseverance, and the power of connecting with other patients.
Before I even started writing the book, I kind of had in my head of what I wanted the messaging to be. Mm-hmm. What did I want people to learn at the end of this? So I kind of modeled it out in my head a little bit.
Yeah.
I didn't certainly have it, you know, cast in stone, and it kind of, you know, I rolled through it, but I think I did a decent job. Other people that know me, that know everything that I've gone through, the one guy that had the similar appendiceal cancer, he was like, oh my God, you remember every little detail, you know? But you know, it's the good, bad, and the ugly, you know? I mean, going through cancer is not fun all the time, but it's not the end of the world either.
One thing I found very interesting is, as you detail in the book, helping others is kind of has been intertwined with your cancer journey from day one, because the day you learned about your cancer was when you were on a road trip to Michigan to
yes,
install some very important hardware at your in-laws' home. Like, you were in the midst of doing something
for others,
and that was the day this journey began. And I think the fact that this is still intertwined with service is very meaningful.
Yeah. No good deed goes unpunished. I remember that. It was, Victoria, my wife, and it was her parents. And they were basically, they were housebound. They couldn't get out. So I knew I could fix that. And, partway along the journey is when I started having problems. But if you read the book, they told me I had cancer. I didn't look at it like, oh my God, this is the end. Even though they're saying, oh, you might have 2 years, I've had doctors tell me, hey, we can't do anything for you, and this and that. And I just don't listen to them. But, even coming back from that, which I had a surgery, which was a right helicolectomy, had 6 inches of my upper and lower intestine removed, my appendix with a tumor in it. And I think I had, quite a few stitches, staples. And I drove home in my Raptor from Michigan. So I pushed too, and maybe a little bit more than other people. Let me give you an example. This is kind of an important thing. The physical side of cancer survival is very important. And one of the treatments I had, I come home with a pump strapped to my side and it's still pumping chemo in. You kind of feel crappy. I have one of the most aggressive, or if not the most aggressive, cancer treatments that you can have. So, it hits you over the head. And you know, you feel it physically, you get fatigue, sometimes nausea, a little lightheaded, whatever. One day I come home and I get up the next day, I had the pump on, and I told Victoria, I said, I gotta go outside and I gotta bury an electrical line. I gotta dig a 50-foot ditch. And she looked at me kind of puzzled. And she said, your color doesn't look good. You don't look like you feel well. And I said, you're absolutely right. I don't feel well, but I'm going to go dig the ditch. And I got out there and I started digging the ditch, and I got about 10 feet and I really felt like crap. I was just, you know, tired, nauseous, lightheaded. And there was a stump nearby. I sat down on it and just was thinking about it for a minute. And I was thinking, you know, just how easy it would be to just quit and just say, I can't do this, and don't push, and just, you know, let the cancer run its course, and just, you know, don't fight back against the chemo. I sat there for a minute thinking about it. And then I said to myself, you know, get your butt up and finish the ditch. And I did. I got up, I finished the ditch, and I come back in the house, and Victoria looked at me and she said, wow, she said, your color looks so much better and you look like you feel better. And I said, yeah, I do. So there is a, and a doctor won't tell you this, but there is a physical benefit to, or a recovery, I guess, benefit for pushing hard when you don't feel like it right after treatments. I can get back to baseline before the next treatment, easy. Usually I can recover from the chemo. It's Avastin, Ritatecan, and 5-FU, I call it FU. They're pretty tough things, but usually after the pump's off, by the fourth day, I feel 90% back to normal. By the end of 2 weeks, I'm as good as new. I'll walk into the doctor's office and they'll tell me, your blood work's like great, you look great. And, you know, they don't see that all the time. I bounce back every time. I get back to baseline, so I don't have a buildup of, you know, wearing down. And that's so important. So I've learned a few things along the way. Now, everybody's a little different, you know, so you got to kind of figure out what your own strategy is. But don't sit idle and let cancer take you. There was a guy that had the same situation that I had, though more advanced. It was appendiceal cancer, and I was connected with him through Friends for Life, which is a cancer connecting kind of group. And I told him that, yeah, I'd help him because he was facing everything that I was going to face. And so I started by talking to this guy on the phone, and I could tell he was just not in a good place. He was scared. He was facing what they call a resection and HIPEC surgery, which is, they call it the mother of all surgeries. I've had it. Basically, you cut open pelvis to sternum, and they take all your insides out. And if there's anything in there they don't like, they take it out, and they kind of put you back together and run 107 degree chemotherapy through your abdomen for an hour and a half with nurses pushing on your abdomen to get it in every crack and crevice. And it's pretty intimidating when you think about it.
Yeah.
And I could tell he was really scared. And I, after a few minutes talking to him, I said, you know what, we just need to meet. And so my wife and I met him and his wife at a Cracker Barrel and in the northern part of Kentucky. And I was looking for a guy that was around 60, was probably driving a Ford because he worked at Ford Motor Company until he retired. And and I was looking for a couple. And so I see this couple drive in a Ford car, and it looked like it might be them. And so I was waiting by the front door. And so as he come in, I'm 6'4", so I'm pretty tall. He probably was about 5'6". And he come through the door, and I was like right next to him. And I said, "Hey, Mike." And he turned to me, and he was like, you know, 2 feet off the front of me. And he looks up at me and he says, "Scott?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm Scott Laird." And he got very emotional. He started crying. He had tears coming down his face. And I said, "It's really me. And look," and I lifted up my shirt and showed him my scar. And my scar is not too bad. And I said, "This is what you needed to see." And I'll tell you, it changed his whole mental attitude going into this thing. He needed to see that somebody could survive.
Yeah.
That brutal surgery. And it was brutal. I went through it. And I can tell you that I had that surgery. It was pretty rough. But I was on my feet the same day. And just to prove to myself that I was going to be okay. Now, when I say I was on my feet, I might have took one or two steps, turned white as a ghost, and had to get back in the bed, but at least I got up. And I had this thing with my wife, the Bee Gees song, Staying Alive. Mm-hmm. And they do the dancing with the hand going up in the air.
Yeah.
And I was in the bed, and I started doing the hand thing. She knew exactly what I was talking about. But I've gone through some tough things, multiple surgeries. I've had radiation. I've had, probably 40 rounds of chemo. And the doctors tell me to this day, "You're absolutely amazing. We don't understand you. And we know nobody like you." And they'll tell me, they'll look at me and they'll say, "And look at you, you look healthy." Now, it's a rare cancer. I don't know if it ever goes away. I'm going to try to outfight it. But I never look at this situation like this is the end of me. I don't. It's just, this is a bump in the road. It's supposed to be part of my life, and I deal with it. I'll get chemo sometimes. I'll be at work the next day. And, you know, people see I really push. And so I don't do things traditionally. You know, most people, I even see it when people find out I've got cancer, they are, "Oh no, like, oh, that's the end," you know? And, but you know, to me, it isn't. It's just part of my life, and I'm a fighter. And so I've proven this over and over to many people, and I've been called, this is a title I've been given, the arbiter of hope. And you know, that people look to me as an example And I can tell you that I have affected a lot of people. Now, the other thing I kind of, and I explain it in my book a little bit, I think everything you go in life, you're supposed to learn from every experience you have. And so I look at this as no different. And so I've figured out how to get through this and how to fight. And if I can demonstrate that example to others and save people's lives, which I know I have saved some lives already, then what a better legacy can you have in your lifetime? That's the way I look at it.
Absolutely. There's one line early in the book that really struck me, and it kind of sums up your whole worldview, I think, which is all of what we know and experience from others can have a personal impact on each of us if we're faced with the same cancer challenges. And to me, that so speaks to your attitude of people need to hear a positive story. People need to hear the story
That's
of someone who fought and who, has made
who
it.
survived.
Yeah.
Who survived? Yeah. And you're absolutely right.
For you, why is it so important to share, to represent for survivors and to share a survivor's story?
Well, I'm a human. I care about my fellow humans, and if I can have an impact on this planet and make a difference for people, which I believe I can, then I feel like I'm kind of gifted a little bit. I'll let me back up a little bit to my story. And when I was a year and 8 months old, I got run over by a car. I broke every bone in my body. I spent 6 months in the hospital, and then was in a wheelchair. So I've been fighting my whole life. I know how to fight. And so if by my example I can help others, to me, that's the most important thing that I can do in my lifetime.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cancer Horizons podcast or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cancer Horizons podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. Find us on Facebook at Cure Today, Twitter at Cure_Today, and Instagram at Cure Today.